Okay, everyone. Hi, welcome. So nice to hear all of you come on the call. I'm Nancy Ross. I'm the Director of National Organizing, and along with my colleague Gwen Mandel and all of us here at IndependentVoting.org, welcome. On tonight's call, we're making a demand to the President to tear down the wall. That's the wall that the parties have erected that keep independents out. Now, I talk to independents every day, and I'm sure you feel this way too. One person after another shares their concern about the total dysfunction and partisanship of the political process. That's why I'm really excited about tonight's call. Jackie Salet, the host of our call and president of IndependentVoting.org, is going to launch a new campaign tonight directed at the President's Commission on Election Administration. Now, I really like this campaign because it's an opportunity to shake up the very narrow political agenda of the commission. Jackie, as you know, is a key leader, strategist, organizer, and spokesperson for the independent movement. She's an unusual political leader, for she's leading a new kind of movement that challenges the power of the parties and empowers the voters. Jackie is also an author. If you haven't read her book yet, Independence Rising, I suggest you buy it today. It's a great summer read. It is now my pleasure to introduce you to Jackie Salet.
Nancy, thank you so much, and hello to everyone all across the country. It was great to hear you all announce yourselves, and I'm so glad that we have this time to talk together briefly tonight. You know, we set up tonight's call about 3 weeks ago with the intention of talking about voter rights, and as it turns out, voter rights became the headline issue of the day today. You've all no doubt seen the news about the Supreme Court decision that came down this morning, in which the court struck down a section of the Voting Rights Act in what I think is a landmark decision that will have, you know, huge ramifications for the country. Very briefly, in its decision, for those of you that haven't had a chance to look at it yet, the court upheld a section of the Voting Rights Act called Section 5, which requires the Justice Department to approve, or what they call pre-clear, any changes to election law in designated areas of the country where racial and language minority rights are considered to be at risk. The court kept that in place, but the court did strike down Section 4, which designates the areas that require protection, basically saying that the designations are out of date, that the criteria for designation are out of date. They were made in the 1960s and in the 1970s, and that Congress now has the responsibility to update them. And so the court struck down the existing Section 4. Now, in the majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts said, and this is a quote, that voting discrimination still exists, that no one doubts that. But the majority, of which he was a part, ruled that the criteria for special protection under the law needed to be reevaluated. And so this decision by the court was a major blow to the Voting Rights Act. Now, as you might imagine, President Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder and Reverend Al Sharpton and many civil rights activists and attorneys and voting rights activists have criticized the court's decision, and to be honest, I understand why they're upset about it. Section 4 and Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act have been its cornerstone, and they've been used, these provisions of the Voting Rights Act have been used thousands of times to protect minority voters from discrimination, mainly, though not exclusively, in the southern states, which, as we know, have a long history of denying the franchise to African Americans and to others. So when I heard the news about the Supreme Court decision, I turned on the TV so I could watch the coverage of the court's decision. I'm sure some of you did too. And then I watched Attorney General Holder's press conference, where the Justice Department and himself as Attorney General responded to the court's decision. So first, at the press conference, he pledged to use the Justice Department to protect voting rights and join the president in calling on Congress to act swiftly to create a new framework for Section 4 so that Section 5 could be used. But he concluded his remarks, Holder did, by reminding everyone that there had been bipartisan support for the Voting Rights Act in Congress. And then he said, kind of in conclusion with great drama and force, this is not a partisan issue. He said, this is not a partisan issue. And my friends, when I heard Attorney General Holder say this, I paused. And I thought, I realized, that the Attorney General, whatever his intentions, either cannot grasp or refuses to grasp what is the fundamental decay of the democratic process in America that, frankly, in my opinion, this court decision was simply a part of. In my own mind, the court decision was not unexpected. And while the president and the civil rights leaders are blaming the court for its decision, I think that as part of their examination of what happened, I think they need to look a little closer to home. The Congress, which passed the Voting Rights Act in 1965, as we know, in response to a massive movement of Americans against inequality and for voting rights, the Congress and the two parties which control it, in my opinion, did not take the necessary steps to protect the Voting Rights Act from the Supreme Court's action today. Updating the criteria of Section 4, modernizing it, taking into account changes that have occurred, would have protected the Voting Rights Act from this intrusion by the Supreme Court. And so I think we have to ask ourselves, why didn't Congress do that? And here's where I think the rubber meets the road. I think Congress didn't do that because in Congress, as in so many places in our government today, partisanship rules. And contrary to Attorney General Holder's comment that this is not a partisan issue, the fact is that everything that goes on in American politics today is turned into a partisan issue. And that is the problem. That's why 40% of Americans today are independents. This is something that our elected officials spend an enormous amount of time complaining about when it serves them to do so, but they spend the rest of the time covering it up and preventing the American people from being able to do anything about it. You know, when I asked Nancy and Gwen to set up tonight's conference call, and I gave them the title, Mr. President, Tear Down This Wall, as Nancy said in her opening remarks. The Voting Rights Act decision had not yet come down from the Supreme Court, but an event of importance to the movement for democracy reform and voting rights had taken place, and that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. And I think it's interesting to talk about it against the backdrop of what just happened with the Supreme Court. As many of you know, earlier this year, President Obama issued an executive order to create a Presidential Commission on Election Administration. And let me just observe here that this is the first time in nearly 20 years, since 1994, that a president has used executive order authority to address the conduct of elections in America, almost 20 years. So this is fairly momentous, really. And the president did so. He issued this executive order under what I consider to be a great deal of pressure, some of which, frankly, I think we can and should take credit for. Now listen, present-day attempts to restrict voting rights didn't begin with the Supreme Court decision handed down today. In fact, the last batch of years have been filled, absolutely filled, with conflict over this very issue. Since 2011, just to give you some basic statistics here, 41 states introduced 180 pieces of legislation to restrict voting rights, whether it was reducing early voting periods, requiring proof of citizenship, limiting access to registration, and other constructs and conduct at the polls. Since the beginning of 2013, 82 restrictive bills have been introduced in 31 states. So the overall climate is very, very heated with respect to the issue of voter participation and voter rights. Huge battles took place in the legislatures and in the courts. And even though these fights were widely recognized as proxy battles for partisan advantage between the parties, none of the elected officials or the legislative bodies that were involved undertook to get to the root of the problem and try to reform the process in ways that made things less partisan. It was the independents, it was our movement, and singularly our movement, which pressed the Congress and the President both to take steps to intervene into the partisanship. Many of these steps are simple and straightforward. They're all the issues that all of us work on day in and day out. Open primaries, top two nonpartisan elections, putting independents on the Federal Election Commission, nonpartisan redistricting, the right to call yourself an independent when you register to vote, and on and on. We have pressed for these kinds of reforms, these kinds of interventions, on behalf of the 40% of the country who, by virtue of being independents, are second-class voters. And by the way, a little-known fact here, last year, I even asked top members of the Obama campaign team if the president would ask his Justice Department to consider whether it could offer voting rights protections to independents, to expand the scope of voting rights protections in the hands of the Justice Department. But the Obama team declined because they said they were afraid the other side would use it against them. And yet Attorney General Holder stands in front of television cameras and tells America that these are not partisan issues. Under pressure from the partisan warfare, which has been huge and widespread and extreme, and under pressure from the independents, the president did establish a commission, and won't you know it, he put a Democrat and a Republican in charge of it. Benjamin Ginsburg, who was an attorney for Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney, and Robert Bauer, who was a former White House chief counsel and an Obama campaign election attorney, are the two co-chairs, and eight other members of the commission were appointed along with them. So what was this commission charged to do? Well, here is the amazing part. In the context of these fierce battles in more than 30 states over controlling the composition of the electorate, in the context of 40% of the country feeling that political parties are inadequate to represent them, in the context of the lowest public approval ratings for Congress in generations, and in the aftermath of the most partisan presidential campaign in recent memory, the Commission on Election Administration was given the narrowest, most limited, most mundane, most contained mandate conceivable. It has been asked to find ways to make the lines shorter at the polls, to facilitate the delivery of military ballots from overseas, to make sure poll workers are adequately trained, and another list of incredibly technical or bureaucratic aspects of the voting process. As I said, the most expansive political crisis and the narrowest of missions given to the commission, whose job it is to try to light the way to reform the political system. When I first read the executive order and reviewed the commission's mandate, like some of you who I've talked to about this, I was a little stunned. To me, it was kind of the political equivalent of going to the hospital emergency room with symptoms of a heart attack and they decide to trim your toenails. The level of avoidance of the actual political crisis in the country is just monumental. And I was actually thinking, I was talking with some people earlier today who were psychologists, and I was saying to them that I think that there should be a special category for it in DSM-5. That's the psychiatrist's manual that catalogs mental and emotional disorders like ADD, attention deficit disorder. This one could be called CAS, or crisis avoidance syndrome, and it should be defined as a mental disorder that afflicts Republican and Democratic Party elected officials. Anyway, when I got over being stunned by the narrowness of the mandate, I began to consider more seriously the opportunity that this commission and its public hearing process presents to us, to the progressive wing of the independent movement and the millions of independent voters that we represent. Because even within the narrowness of how the commission's agenda has been framed, we can still engage them and use the platform they created to bring forth two important things. First, that even under existing law, independents are supposed to have various forms of access to the voting process, but we are regularly denied that access. Independents are misinformed by poll workers about their voting rights. Democrats and Republicans receive mail ballots at home, but in many jurisdictions, independents have to go to the Board of Elections to pick them up. Independents can be forced to sign loyalty oaths to be able to vote in certain primaries, and on and on. I detailed a number of these in a letter that I sent to the commission this week, which is posted on our website, which you can take a look at. But you know all these issues firsthand. You've experienced them. The commissioners have a mandate to ensure that every entitled voter should have ease of access, that poll workers should assist and not deflect voters at the polls. And we have many, many negative experiences to share with the commission along those lines, and we must do that. But that's not all. We not only have to provide testimony about the problems we face, we also have to challenge the way the commission has framed the problems. They're acting as if the only thing wrong with American democracy can be tweaked by a few administrative adjustments. How absurd. We need to educate the commissioners about the fact that the structure of the electoral process is first and foremost set up to accommodate the parties, not the voters. Something must be done about that. They must focus attention, for example, on the primaries, which is where so many abuses against independents occur. I think that it is well within the scope of the commission's mission to have a look at these serious structural problems. In other words, we want to tell the commission it must tear down the wall between independents and other voters, and we want to let the public know that we are making that demand. So I'm pleased to report to you that this campaign, this project, has already begun. The commission held its first public meeting on Friday in Washington, D.C. Now, this meeting did not permit any testimony from the public. It was basically its organizational meeting where the commissioners were actually meeting each other for the first time and being sworn in and presenting the outlines and the contours of its mandate and its hearing plan. But we were very fortunate to have Steve Richardson, a founder of Virginia Independent Voters Association, and Brandy Martindale, an executive committee member of the New York City Independence Party, in attendance at the meeting. And I had a chance to talk with Steve Richardson over the weekend and get his thoughts and impressions of the meeting, and he gave me just a terrific report on this one-hour gathering. It was very short. But he said that it was very clear from being in the room that the commission is making every effort to limit the scope of their activity while we are seeking to expand it. And his summary was this. I want to read you this quote because I think it's so well put. Steve said, "The commission was not prepared for comments at the swearing-in ceremony in D.C., but they do know independents are watching. I encourage everyone to remind them that counting all the votes is not as important as counting all the voters." A wonderful, wonderful, and brilliant statement about this. Thank you so much for your thoughts on this. This coming Friday, the commission will be holding its first hearing where public testimony will be presented, and that is going to be taking place at the University of Miami in Coral Gables. We have a team presenting there. John Quinn, who's the Broward County spokesperson for FloridaIndependentVoting.org, and Gigi Wentz from West Palm Beach. John and Gigi, we're fortunate to have you representing us And we're counting on you to engage the commissioners and to show them the real people, the real independents, 26% of Florida voters, whose voting rights will be impacted by the discussions they have and by the decisions that they make. Now, in the months ahead, there will be three more hearings in Denver, Colorado on August 8th. Folks in Colorado, take note. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on September 4th. And in Ohio, a city has not yet been chosen, on September 20th. And we will be represented at all of these. We'll be giving testimony at all of these. We'll have audience members and observers at all of these. And we will bring the voice of independence into this process in full force. We're also doing more. We have a letter now which calls on the commissioner to use the power given to them by the president to tear down that wall that keeps independents outside the mainstream of political decision-making. Some of you have already seen the letter and signed on to it yourselves. And tonight I'm asking everyone who's on the call not only to sign the letter, but to get five other people to sign on to it by the weekend. The letter's on our website, and it is so easy. People can sign it online. So please do that, and please get those additional signers as soon as you can. So here's what I think we're looking at in sum. We, independents, independentvoting.org, as many of you know, have been saying for a very long time that in America today, democracy is the issue, that the process, the way we make policy, the way we look at issues, the way we respond to the jobs crisis, the education crisis, the privacy and national security crisis, the way we conduct our democracy will determine whether or not we can move forward as a country. The quality of a political process is not just a side note. It is the main challenge that we face. Some of you may have seen the news coming out of Brazil over the last couple of weeks, where tens of thousands of people came out into the streets to protest an increase in public transit fares, and almost overnight, that turned into a movement to reform the governing and political process in order to root out special interests and corruption. In Brazil, a nation where the economy is growing, where the economy is on the rise, the quality of life issues and the process issues have become one and the same. And that's the way it should be here in the United States, too. That is the movement that we have to lead. I am very, very proud of the fact that we have walked the process road, that we're walking this process road together, even though it's been very lonely at times. It's going to get a lot less lonely. We say the political system has to be reformed dramatically so to put America back to work, and we intend to tell the commission that in every city that they go to. With your help, we will find all of America's 40 million independents, sign them up into our movement. And remember, we're building a new kind of voting rights movement. This is a movement that brings all Americans together by working to bust up partisanship and special interest politics. That's the movement that all of you are leading. So let me just say that this is a very important summer for the independent movement, much more important than I think anybody realizes. There's tremendous political chaos now. Chaos in the courts, in the Congress, in the public domain, where we no longer have confidence in the institutions that govern us, most especially with respect to the party. But out of that chaos we can build. That's how our movement grows. So let me leave you with just a few practical notes about things that I want to ask each of you to do in the coming days and weeks. First of all, again, let me remind you, sign on to the letter to the commission. It's on the website at www.independentvoting.org. You can sign it right online. And if everyone on the call will ask at least five others to sign on to the letter by the end of the weekend, we will kick off the campaign in a big, big way. Next, Steve Richardson from Virginia is heading up a committee that's going to monitor the commission's hearings and help prepare testimony, develop public comments, and all of that. And if you'd like to participate in that committee, please contact Steve directly at stevenrichardson@verizon.net. That's Steven, S-T-E-V-E-N, Richardson, R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-O-N, at verizon.net. And please join that committee. There's so much work to be done in this arena. We also have a new bi-monthly newsletter called The Hub, which covers activities that independents are doing around the country that are of interest to our movement. So send in your pictures, your videos, your stories, and links so that they can be included in future editions. For those of you who've been participating in or are interested in spokesperson training, the next spokesperson training call is on Sunday, July 14th at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. These are interactive calls with our Director of Communications, Sarah Lyons. And with this campaign underway, it's going to be a great opportunity to get on the air, to talk to reporters, to call into radio shows, to write letters to the editor. So come get the training so that you can get your voice out there and represent your fellow independents. Finally, for more information on becoming involved in activities in your area, including what's going to be happening with the hearings that are coming to your region, please contact Nancy Ross or Gwen Mandel at 1-800-288-3201 or email us at national@independentvoting.org. So thank you all so much for coming on the call. It's great to have the opportunity to talk. Please stay very close to all the news about this campaign. Sign the letter. Get your friends and family and colleagues and neighbors to sign. And let's bring our voice into this commission process so that independents can be heard and we can make a difference for changing the process of American politics. Thanks so much, everyone, and have a great couple of months.